Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, AFR.net. As always, we thank you for listening to AFR. We got a lot to talk about today on this here program. Joining me to co-host is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Abe Hamilton. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Tim and Ed. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing good. We got some good stuff to talk about. A little bit later on, we're going to discuss, it'll be time to start back to school for a lot of people, little people, and I guess little people will be starting back, and then some other
bigger
folks.
People.
Yeah, bigger people. But there's a move around the country to pray for the kids in the schools and the teachers, especially in light of the safety issues we've been having around the country. And what better way than to pray? There's no better way than to have prayer. And a lot of parents are having prayer walks, what they call prayer walks, at the schools. And so we're going to be talking to Jessica Webb in studio. She's on staff here with us here at AFA.
Right.
I saw what she wrote about this, and we said, hey, we need to talk about this. This is good. And I think this is going on across the country. So a lot of other stuff we're going to talk about today on the program. Looking forward to it. Yesterday in Dallas, Texas, I was going to say there's no other Dallas. But
you don't want to get in that trouble.
I know, but as soon as I do that, somebody's going to write me from Dallas, Hawaii. Tell me, there is. There's a Dallas, Hawaii.
Because we found out there's a Memphis, Texas.
The other day, and I got corrected. I said, there's no Memphis, Texas. And then we ended up having to talk to the Memphis, Texas Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
So I'm not going to do that again. Now, yesterday, they had the memorial service for the slain officers in Dallas 5. And speakers at the event, including President Obama, former President Bush 2, those two fellows spoke. Abe, do you know if any? I think David Brown, the chief of police, spoke. I only saw clips of Bush and Obama speaking, and I thought both of them did a very good job speaking at an event that was very hard to speak about. It was the most support I'd heard from President Obama for law enforcement ever in one talk. I say support. He was empathizing. Would you say, Abe? Did you get to see any of it?
I saw some of it. I mean, the president. I mean, he was more measured than I'd heard him before.
I guess that's how you could say it.
Yeah. But he still.
My wife
resist.
Wanted to know: did he get saved? Because I mean, what happened to him? This doesn't sound like him. Of course, he did some of that. Then he went into his gun control, and then he went into his grievance about what did he go back to? Did he go back to slavery? I think slavery, civil rights. Anyway,
he was talking about bias. You know,
giving us a history lesson again about, as he's apt to do, about bias. You know what? I run the risk of being sarcastic, and I don't want to be because this is a very serious moment, but there's going to be bias around till the end of the world. That doesn't mean we don't try to work on it, I guess. But there's been bias around since the dawn of time, and there's going to be bias around to the end of the world, and it runs different ways, not just one way. It's not just whites against blacks or blacks against whites. It runs both ways. So I don't know. He said some good things. I would give it to him. President Obama did. President Bush did, too, say some very nice things.
I've been very impressed with David Brown, the chief of police there in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
Under terrible circumstances.
Without question. So anyway, it was a very moving day for the people of Dallas. President Obama spoke. President Bush spoke. President Bush, of course, lives in the Dallas area,
right?
So it was apropos for him to him to speak there. But I wanted to talk about something related to what's going on in our country with the Black Lives Matter and then the confrontation with the police officers and the police departments around the country and the tense nature of some of this. There was a story in the that I was reading a couple of days ago about a National Football League player, and his name is Crowell. That's his last name, right, Abe?
Crowell.
I should have Crowell. Anyway, he played football sometime at the University of Georgia and then at Alabama State University before going on to the NFL. Well, what did he do, Abe?
Good old Isaiah?
About a week or so ago.
Well,
I think it was a week ago or so.
Well, it was in the aftermath of the Dallas shooting.
Immediately following the Dallas shooting, he did it.
Okay, and what we're about to describe to you folks is disturbing.
Yeah.
Okay, but go ahead and tell us. Okay. So let me set this up by saying we have a crazy world out there of Instagrams, Facebook, tweets. A lot of people want to do things to show their raw emotions, and they want the world to see it. And what we're seeing a lot of times is people doing this, and then they regret it hours later or the next day later, as they should, but they shouldn't have done it in the first place.
And it begs the question, do they regret doing it, or do they regret the consequences of doing it?
That's true. But I'm just speaking to the old, you know, the old adage your mom or your grandma used to tell you, well, just sleep on it.
Think before you speak.
Yeah.
Think before you speak. Because those are wise words.
Or even a little bit more old school, although talking about emails, how can that be old school? But I know my editor, Randall Murphy, when I was with the AFA Journal, somebody had write some, you know, nasty, sarcastic, you know, email to me personally about an article, and I'd want to, you know, I'm hot-headed Italian, want to fire right back. He always said, basically, yeah, this is the equivalent of putting the letter in the drawer before you mail it. He said, before you email it, save it, kind of sleep on it kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's all. However that advice comes out in whatever generation.
There's a lot of things I've said and done in my life. I know that if I'd have waited a couple of days, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Right.
Have we all been there?
Yeah.
And I think the best wisdom comes from the scripture. Proverbs 29:11 says, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keeps it until afterwards.
Uh-oh.
Where is that?
Well, I've been a fool sometimes.
Proverbs 29:11.
Well, it nails us, doesn't it?
It really does. And it just, what used to only happen in private with an audience of maybe two or three, now the world gets to witness. I would just say as a general rule, in the words, sage words of Herm Edwards, do not press send.
That is a great piece of advice. That's a modern day proverb.
I mean, it really is. I mean,
Do not press send.
That is where
all right,
we are.
This relates to what we're about to talk about. Anyway, with this National Football League player who plays for the Cleveland Browns, tell us who it is and what happened here.
Yeah, Isaiah Crowell, who's a running back for the Cleveland Browns, in the immediate aftermath of the horrible, I would describe as an assassination of officers in Dallas, Texas, Isaiah Crowell takes to his Instagram page and posts an image. I'm really even reticent to describe it, because when I saw it, my mouth dropped and I actually dropped my phone. But you have an officer, an individual that appears to be a police officer who's clearly appears to be kneeling in the picture with a person dressed in all black regalia with what appears to be a backpack of a sort with the American flag and colors, stars, and stripes on equal the opposite sides of the shoulder strap area, with the individual in all black behind the police officer's image, with one hand, the right hand over the police officer's mouth, and the left hand harboring what appears to be a knife with blood gushing from the officer's neck in the image. And the caption.
Slitting his throat.
Yeah, slitting his throat. And.
So he put this out on his Instagram.
On his
just
Instagram,
to be simplified a little bit. That was a very detailed description. But if you remember Jihadi John.
Yeah.
And on the international television when he. Member of ISIS. When he cut the guy's heads off. He would go on television and he would stand over them, and then he'd slit their throat. I hate to even talk about this, but that's what it was. It was the cop having his throat slit by the.
He's on his knees with his arms. Right. It was tied behind his back.
You can go and look at it at our Today's Issues Facebook page.
Yeah,
and our Today's Issues Facebook page, and I'll give you a warning. It's a warning. It's a graphic image, but. The point is, he puts this up, this NFL football player advocating the killing. I don't know how you interpret that.
Well, read what he says underneath it when he sent the.
Is it? I don't have it here. I was trying to pull it up.
I'm trying to read it. It is so small.
You're talking about what he says, the caption?
Yes. Yeah. Can you see it? It is just so small.
I can zoom in. Yeah, I have it here.
Right.
And he says.
This is the commentary
underneath Kroll by Isaiah Kroll.
By Kroll, yeah.
Okay.
And he puts mood. Kroll, mood, colon. They give polices all types of weapons, and they continuously choose to kill us. Hashtag weak.
Okay.
And he has dot, dot, dot after, and after, they choose to kill us, dot,
right.
dot, dot, which I interpret obviously to mean, therefore, we have, and then the image speaks.
Okay, so here we're drawing some points out here that need to be discussed about this. The player there has subsequently apologized.
Yes.
He didn't leave that Instagram up but a minute or so.
But it got 33 likes before he took it down.
Yeah. And I'm guessing he took it down as soon as his agent saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, so he does this. He plays for the Cleveland Browns, and it makes it into the news in the Cleveland area and some national news.
People are outraged in Cleveland.
Absolutely. And but here's the point, one of the points we want to make here. There's been no retribution or punishment handed out by the Cleveland Browns or the National Football League.
Right.
To Isaiah Kroll, for his actions here. This is something that, and yet, so you show up, all they said was they were disappointed, and.
It was inappropriate.
It was inappropriate. I mean, some very mealy-mouthed.
Now, they did say something about, did they say disturbing? I mean, they did have
disturbing,
a couple of words in, but there was also some of the kind
of. Yeah, we've talked to him about this. He knows how disappointed we are. We're talking about posting a picture of a cop having his throat slit as if he's in favor of killing cops.
Right.
I mean, it can't be interpreted any other way. And the response by the Browns and the NFL has been pathetic. No fine. He wasn't kicked off the team. Or I guess in the NFL, I don't know if that's called kicked off the team, but you know what I'm saying. He's not playing
cut.
For us. Cut.
Yeah, he cut. I don't release.
Now, in contrast, Ed, another NFL player also had an Instagram a couple of years ago about another matter. Will you tell us what happened to this?
Yeah, that was in 2014, Miami Dolphins. I think it was safety or defensive back, Don Jones.
Yeah.
When Michael Sam, who's the first openly gay college draft-eligible football player, got drafted. This is back in the 2014 draft. He had someone take a picture of him, Michael Sam, kissing his boyfriend in celebration, and that was tweeted out. And Don Jones tweeted in response, horrible, okay?
He tweeted out the word
With underneath the picture of Michael Sam kissing his boyfriend.
Okay.
So what happened to Jones? Well, he was fined. He was suspended from the Dolphins and forced into sensitivity training before he could return to the team. Okay. Now, Don Jones also apologized, but nevertheless was disciplined. So what you pointed out yesterday, and we made this clear in one of our action alerts, and it's like you said, this is on our Facebook page, is Don Jones gets hammered by the Miami Dolphins and the NFL for basically expressing his belief that, you know, homosexuals shown kissing is horrible. Okay, people can argue about that all day long. We're talking about the punishment meted out to Don Jones, and so far, the Cleveland Browns, neither the Cleveland Browns nor the NFL have done anything to Isaiah Crowell. So what is wrong with this picture? No pun intended.
I mean, and it basically says that the NFL, as a league, is more concerned with statements made that could be construed as negative concerning homosexuality and does not share that same outrage for threats to kill police officers.
Right.
I mean, that's the message that the NFL is sending. Whether they intend to or not, the facts are you say something that can be construed as negative against homosexuality, you face the wrath of the NFL.
Right.
If you incite violence towards police officers, they don't consider it the same scorn. And it would be one thing if this situation didn't exist in the midst of the heightened circumstance that it was brought to bear in. But this happened immediately following the murder of five police officers.
Right. So this wasn't even just him just riffing. Talking about Isaiah Crowell here.
No.
He wasn't just simply saying, hey, I don't like police, and here's what I think should happen. This was in the immediate aftermath of five police officers losing their lives.
This is awful.
An assassination,
this
a
is
massacre.
Awful. This is worth a life. You really and truly, this is worth banning him for at least a year. I would say lifetime. I mean, unless you want to show some mercy on the fella.
But, I mean, the image is an ISIS-like character.
Yeah,
it's no interpretive flexibility here. I mean,
right.
Yeah, this is beyond. You know, we're disappointed and it's inappropriate. This kind of response from the Cleveland Browns, and they're getting hammered in their hometown.
Well, the police threatens to not show up for Browns games because that's an after hours optional thing.
Yeah.
I think
you
get paid optional, you know, because it's a threat. These guys are, you know, and when men and women, they now are wondering if someone's on top of a building going to shoot them someday.
So you can go to our Facebook page, Today's Issues Facebook page, and link there to our action alert, or you can go straight to AFA.net and see this.
It's in the right-hand corner.
AFA.net. The point is, if you criticize anything having to do with the LGBT movement, you get hammered by the NFL. You show a picture of a cop of cutting off a cop's head, ISIS style, you don't even get...
You get a slap on the wrist.
You get a slap on the wrist.
Not even a slap.
Verbal scolding.
You get told to calm down, Buttercup.
Right.
Just to be real.
Right. That's just good. I have the number for the those who want to use it. If you want to call the NFL in New York, this is the office for the NFL, the National Football League. And remember, when you call, the person answering the phone did not make this decision.
Right.
Okay, but what we're asking for... We're asking for punishment at least equal to what the other gentleman got, Don Jones, a couple of years ago. He almost had his career ended because he just said that two men—
He was sent to re-education camp.
Yeah.
Sensitivity training.
Yeah. And you can read— We got all this documented at the website, AFA.net, on the right side on our action alert. But here's a number to the NFL. You can just tell them you're appalled. You can look at this, and you're appalled that the NFL is not disciplining Isaiah Crowell over his post of the cop having his head cut off. 212-450-2000. That dials New York City, the NFL office. All you got to do is tell them I'm appalled at this player, Crowell, for the Cleveland Browns not getting punished for posting a picture of a cop having his head cut off.
What was the number again?
212-450-2000. 212-450-2000. All right, there you go. I want to talk more about the situation later, but I want to talk about something a little more positive, and that is kids are getting ready to go back to school not too long from now, what, a month or so, and a lot of moms and dads are, and as always, concerned about their safety and what kind of experiences they're going to have at school, and so prayer, a lot of prayer goes into the kids getting ready to go back to school. And I ran across this article called Prayer Walk for a Generation. Prayer Walk. I've heard of prayer walks. I know what they are. Prayer Walks for a Generation. And Jessica Webb is in studio with us. Jessica's on staff here at AFA, works in our foundation. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank
you. Did you write this?
I did.
And tell us about it.
Well, this is just an opportunity. The Lord just kind of placed this on my heart at the beginning of the summer to see if we could go inside of schools in our local area, the county that we're in, and just pray the hallways, the bathrooms, classrooms, pray for principals and board members and anyone who might even come inside of the school, and that the schools would be just saturated with the Holy Spirit and woo people's hearts in our community to receive Him and receive salvation.
So the Lord laid this idea on your heart, and what'd you do with it?
Well, at first I started emailing the superintendents in the area.
Right.
But really the first thing I did, I went to Abe and I said, is this even something that we can possibly do? Because I had never done anything like this before. I didn't even know where to begin.
The Lord was making you a prayer activist.
That's right.
And you hadn't been one. I mean, you'd prayed before, but not going to the schools.
That's right.
Okay, praying. So Abe, is this okay? Is this constitutional?
Absolutely, it's constitutional.
But okay. Now you have to get permission first.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
You get permission from the authorities, you know, to go, and you can't trespass.
Right.
Right. And so what did you do then?
Well, after I got a hold of the superintendents and they said, everything's good, contact the principals. That's exactly what I did. I started emailing all the principals
right. In
the area, asking if
not just
have
your
access.
Own school, you were going around the county.
Right.
That you
and we actually homeschool our kids. So we're not even in the public school, but the Lord really placed the public school on my heart, you know, that this was something that we really needed to do, because a lot of time parents will interact and be moved more by their children than they would about someone that they don't even know. So if the Lord gets a hold of their children's hearts and they take that home, there's a more likelihood that the parents are going to come to salvation and start raising their children according to the Word of God. So this is a really great opportunity for the next generation to really mold and change the way our nation looks.
All right, let me get this right.
Yeah.
Let me get this right. You homeschool your children.
Yes.
Yet you have a lot. Obviously, you have a lot of friends and children you know who go to the public schools. And God just said, "I want you to go and pray for these kids in the public schools."
That's right.
So you then went to the efforts that you did, and so what does this look like? Do you get your prayer warriors together and go to the schools?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, I made a page. It's a Prayer Walk for a Generation Facebook page. And then I started emailing different churches within the county and mailing them the flyer, just saying if there's anyone there that feels led to intercede for the public schools, if they feel like the Lord has placed that on their hearts, this is an opportunity for them to step out in faith and do that. It's not necessarily something for the public school in their town, but just any public school that they feel led to pray for.
How do you do this? Do you go to the school and walk around
and
pray? That's what you do, physically walk around and pray.
That's right. So this morning we did one at Tupelo Middle School.
Yeah.
And we had about 7 or 8 people, and we came together first, and we prayed together.
Before school starts?
It's in the summertime, so the students aren't there. It's
gotcha.
We're not interrupting classes. And then we just kind of separated out and covered the perimeter outside, prayed the property, prayed for the inside, the hallways, the classrooms, every inch of the school building we walked through and just prayed. I actually put together different prayer tools that are specific for teachers, specific for students, specific for parents.
Where are these?
These are right here. They're kind of lengthy, though. But they're basically just scripture.
Do you have them posted somewhere on the internet?
I don't have them posted, but I can. Anybody that would like to, who would like to have these or would like to do this in their area, I am not claiming ownership of any of this. This is the Lord's project, so you can use it however you want to or change it. But I do say, get out there and prayer walk your community, prayer walk your schools, prayer walk businesses, prayer walk churches.
What is your email?
Jweb, J-W-E-B-B, at afa.net.
Thanks, Jessica.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll let Kirby Anderson of Point of View fire away at current events of the day.
If you thought it was a good idea for the UK to actually get out of the EU, in other words, was it good for Great Britain to no longer have a transnational entity dictating what kind of laws, then maybe you've got some real concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Don't miss the next edition of Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. There's a time and a season for everything. That's what the good book tells us. A time to weep, a time to mourn, a time to tear down, a time to heal. That's what yesterday's memorial service in Dallas was supposed to be. But instead of uniting us, President Obama divided us. His remarks were offensive, standing in stark contrast to those of former President Bush, whose simple elegance reminded us of a time long past, a time of decency. The president used his bully platform to defend Black Lives Matter and memorialize two suspects shot by police. It was neither the time nor the place. That service was not about Baton Rouge or Minnesota or Black Lives Matter. It was about five Dallas police officers gunned down while trying to protect those who despised them. It was about the children who lost a father, wives who lost their husband. Yesterday was supposed to be about them. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Jessica Webb was with us a few minutes ago, and she's just a mom who loves her kids and loves the community kids. And I just thought that was, you know, a wonderful story. The Lord laid it on her heart to have a prayer walk for in the schools in her community, and she just took the bull by the horns there and put it together.
I think what's admirable is, many things admirable about that you just described, but the fact that she doesn't have kids in the public schools,
right,
but she cares about her neighbor's kids.
Right. She could say, what do I care?
Right. Yeah,
not my kids.
You parents want to keep your
right.
kids in those godless schools.
Right.
Well, you know, that's a debate that a lot of people have, but she cares about those kids too.
Right.
And that's important.
And it's not anything that gets any glory.
No.
Right.
You know, nobody's going to give you a key to the city.
Right.
Or anything like that. You're just simply saying, hey, and I was the one who asked her to come on to talk about this. Anyway, her, Jessica, J Webb at afa.net is
with
her
two
email.
B's.
Yes.
Webb.
Yeah, she's a staff member here at AFA, and I learned she was doing this. I said, hey, it'd be great to come on and talk about this. Maybe other people in other communities want to do something like this. Well, we told you it would happen, and you knew it would, and here we have, I don't know if this is the first case of it, but.
It's not the first. No.
Here's a story on Fox News website, foxnews.com. An Idaho man who told police he identifies as a woman was arrested Tuesday after allegedly taking photos of a woman in a Target fitting room. officials said. Now, Abe, this is Target, again, the national retail chain. They're the ones who said a couple, 3 months ago, hey, men, come on into women's restrooms and fitting areas. We're good with that. And people around the country joined our boycott of Target. He's closing in on 1.4 million
That's right.
families have said, we're not going back there anymore as long as Target has this policy. And you warned us, and we all warned them what would happen. It's happened here. And I'm just wondering if Target might be liable in some way, potentially, for allowing this kind of dangerous situation to occur. Go ahead.
And what you said is right. We tried to warn Target. You went to Minnesota
right.
to warn them in person. I attended their shareholders meeting to again warn them in person, but they nevertheless doubled down or tripled down even on their commitment to allow men into women's restrooms and changing rooms. And here we have here a biological male who identifies himself as a woman has now been arrested for voyeurism peering in on a woman. In the changing room.
Pictures.
And taking
so
pictures.
So let me ask you this.
Took pictures and then ran.
Yeah.
And the woman who's been violated is screaming.
That's right.
Give me those pictures.
Yeah.
Right.
Yet a man, you can't have a transgendered woman, folks. We all know this. Either you're a man or you're a woman. Either you're a man or you're a woman. I'm not going to get into much more detail than that. But
I don't think you need to.
A woman, okay? So you can't be a transgendered woman. You're a man in a woman's dress. I don't care what you call yourself. You're a man dressed up like a woman in a woman's restroom. Or in this case, Abe, the fitting area.
The fitting area.
Right. And this guy, now, as far as I'm looking at his police picture after he was arrested, okay, he's not wearing makeup. He doesn't have a wig or anything like that. He looks like a man. But he says, I identify as a woman. That's
right.
Why I'm in the woman's dressing room. And he's taking pictures of a woman unclothed. So does that make him a lesbian? Okay. And that sounds like I'm being a smarty pants, okay? He's a man, clearly a man, identifying as a woman, but he's taking pictures of a woman. So we're so fouled up. Does that mean he identifies as a lesbian? A woman interested in other women? And what I'm saying here, even though that sounds like I'm just being, you know, whatever, what I'm saying is once you break the mold, okay, once you detach the obvious biological, the dual biology, the dual gender model by which God created man, then anything and everything is possible, even to the extent that a man clearly interested in women identifies as a woman. So we get into such bizarre territory that you can't even make head nor tails of what this guy's motivation is.
That's right. So, and here's the thing that I don't think a lot of people realize. Now, the woman who was violated, she's clamoring to get the photos back.
Right.
But now you have a criminal investigation. So those photos now become evidence.
Yes.
To be used in the prosecution. So she won't be able to get the photos back to get them deleted because now they're evidence in a criminal case.
By the way, we're talking about a case in Idaho. This story is posted at foxnews.com. It's in their latest news section on the front page. Maybe we have it at onenewsnow.com. I'm not sure. I'll check it in a minute. But it says the headline is Transgender Woman Arrested in Voyeurism Incident at Idaho Target. What happened is just what we warned would happen. A man dressed up like a woman, used to call them transvestites, went into a Target. Target has welcomed this. This is the point. Target has said to transgendered.
Well, this doesn't even say he was dressed as a woman.
But that's their policy. You don't have to
that's
be dressed
right.
as
that's,
a woman.
That's,
well, that, excuse me. Then I don't know whether he was dressed as a woman. But all he has to say is, I feel like I'm a woman right now.
And so what could Target do to keep this from happening and should have kept this from happening is when a man walks into
women's
fitting area, you say, hey, you're not allowed in there. You're a man.
Right.
You don't let them say, yeah, but I identify as a woman. Right. Who is now going to take pictures of other women. Okay, well, you're not fooling anybody.
Right.
But you set up that obstacle to perverts like this.
Right.
By saying men go into men's, right. men's room fitting area, women in the women's area.
Like we have since the dawn of civilization.
The dawn of civilization, you put up a roadblock. But now that that roadblock's been removed, guys like Sean Patrick Smith, age 43, here in Idaho.
Can you imagine he went in and started taking pictures of women unbeknownst to them in the fitting area. I guess one of them found out about it because they got mad and started chasing him. And here's what I wonder, Abe. Mm-hmm. I know you're an attorney. Target's lawyers got to be a little nervous. What if this woman says, "You know what? I'm going to sue Target because they did nothing but encourage this situation."
That's exactly right. And I've said it before on the air. And the touchstone for a case like this will be negligence, not even gross negligence, just simple negligence. And the way that it's evaluated, would a reasonable person similarly situated be able to anticipate this type of behavior occurring? Well, anybody would probably put a state's exhibit or plaintiff's exhibit number one, AFA's petition page, to show, yeah, not only would a reasonable person think it would happen, over nearly 1.4 million people saw this coming.
Right.
So surely, Target, you should see it coming.
Well, you can join our boycott of Target. Over 1.3 million people already have. They're closing in on 1.4 million. We need to get to 2 million. A lot of people said, you know what? Target's going to do this. I'm not shopping there anymore.
Right.
Not
folks, draw a line somewhere.
Exactly.
For goodness sake.
This is something you can do.
I mean, if you can't even sign this and not go to Target, then when the end of the world comes, I don't want to hear you squawking. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Right, because
you can't deny yourself a little convenience.
This is so clear cut.
To save Western civilization,
yeah.
Then you get what you deserve.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get angry now.
That's okay. Well, I think 1.4 million people say, yeah, I'm with you, Ed.
Yeah.
On that, and that represents families. And their stock has taken a nosedive,
yeah.
Target. Their sales, we'll find out what they are for this quarter in August. And a lot of other companies have looked at what happened to Target and said, we're not getting involved in that.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good thing that has been accomplished with this boycott. Yeah. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed, our next guest.
Yes, want to welcome Christopher Riley, who's president of God's People Saved. GPS is a nonprofit educational organization that speaks to a number of critical policy issues in America. Christopher is also the author of the book we're going to discuss with him today, and the title of that is Deadly Progressivism, the Political and Scientific Threat to Humanity in 21st Century America. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Oh, well, thanks for having me this morning.
Christopher, let me ask you this. I mean, progressivism, you got the word progress right in there. So, I mean, that's a good thing, right? And we all want, you know, technological and scientific progress. They cure diseases and all that. Why do you have a problem with progressivism?
Well, I don't necessarily have a problem with progress. I have a problem with making it the number one priority in our society. The book is about eugenics and progressivism. And the fact that progressivism as an ideology and as a political program is really promoting eugenics and has gone hand in hand with that in our American history. Eugenics, it's a word that some people aren't familiar with. It comes from the Greek. It's eugenics. It's the attempt to perfect the human race, basically by eliminating unwanted groups and characteristics. And like you said, that's, you know, perfection. Hey, you know, the Bible says we're supposed to perfect ourselves. What's wrong with that? But the problem with it is that it's based on false or exaggerated assumptions that certain people will harm the human race by reproducing. And historically, we have over 60,000 people in the United States that were forcibly sterilized, meaning they went through surgery that prevented them from being able to have children, most of these women. 60,000 people were forcibly sterilized up into the 1970s in the United States, and some of this is still going on. It's still the law of the land. It's based on the Supreme Court decision. This is something which is present and something which has affected our American history, and which we really need to be careful about as Christians and as human beings in this country.
Well, Christopher, give our listeners just a quick, very brief history lesson here, because a lot of people say, well, you know, I know progressives now, that's what we used to call them, liberals, and they're basically people from the 1960s. But progressivism is really a movement that that started in Europe in the 1880s and came over here to this country. I mean, this is not a new ideology, is it?
No, it's not. And like all ideologies, it has changed over time. Progressives, a lot of them initially were passionate Christians who were middle-class Americans who were looking to make some big changes in society. And they really saw problems with particularly the upper class and its idea of individualism being kind of a way to forgive themselves for a lot of their excesses. Divorce was coming into play during that time in the United States. Before that, it had pretty much been unheard of. So there was a lot of good things about progressives initially. What has happened, though, is progressivism at its base is really a rejection of the idea that the individual is a child of God and that the individual has basic human rights that are inherent in that individual. So what happens is progressives are looking to society, they're looking to government, they're looking to collective action, a lot of socialist concepts, as ways to progress and as ways to improve society. And this has become, essentially, for most progressives, this has really become an attack on the family, which is our most conservative institution in society. It's become an attack on Christianity. It's become a preference for minorities like transgender, you were just talking about, where you get these bizarre defenses of bizarre behavior, essentially because they have no real sense of what human rights are. These human rights come from God, and they don't come from some basic concept that somebody made up out of thin air.
Christopher, this is Abe here. If you could connect the dots for our listeners in this regard. You just said that progressivism almost always, or not, you didn't say almost always, but progressivism ends up with attacks upon the family and Christianity. You said for the family is the most conservative institution in our society. Why do you think progressivism results in attacks upon the family and Christianity?
Well, the ultimate goal, progressivism is a utopian ideology. It's an idea that society as a group, as a whole, can eventually become perfect in some way. And they have a vision of a society in where you have individuals who are focused on each other, who are focused on equality in terms of the in terms of material benefits and in terms of the way that they treat each other, which all sounds great. You know, there's a lot of Christian love thy neighbor concepts in here. But what it ultimately does is what they're looking for is a government-led society, and even within the government, an executive-led society, in which the elites, those who really know best what's good for society, are determining what's good for everyone else. So you have this flat, equal society of people who essentially look to the elites for direction. And, you know, families don't allow that. You know, families are focused on the family. They're focused on family welfare, on raising children, on developing morals and concepts which involve self-reliance, which involve loving thy neighbor, but loving yourself first as a child of God. And this is not at all something which helps to develop the perfect citizen in a progressive sense, the citizen that is going to follow the government and is going to allow the government to essentially change the Constitution, to change the values of society, in a direction where progressives feel society is going to be perfect.
Christopher Riley is our guest. Christopher, the name of your book and where is it available?
The book is called Deadly Progressivism, and it's available on Amazon.com. It's also available, you can see the website about the book with some reviews, which is at deadlyprogressivism.com. And the organization that I'm starting up is called God's People Saved, and that's godspeoplesaved.org.
Thanks for being on with us. You know, this is a issue a lot of people have just been, that is, what is, I call it secular progressivism, based on the philosophy of secular humanism, what used to be called humanism, that is the idea that man is God. Although some people who subscribe to progressivism would not be atheist or agnostics, right, even. They would say they believe in God. The contention, the war, President Obama, for example, he claims to be a Christian, and he's a progressive. And there are people like that, the Democrat Party today in America represents, and they would probably say proudly, progressivism. Why is it necessarily at war with the Judeo-Christian worldview? Maybe Abe asked that earlier, but I mean, I don't understand. If they're all for moving forward, and why does it always seem like these people are at war and want to squelch the Judeo-Christian worldview of man?
Yeah, I think it's not necessary. Certainly you can have an idea of society that progresses and that eventually becomes perfect, and you can have that vision. As Christians, we are to believe that grace is sufficient for us, and that our power will be perfected in weakness, as it says in 2 Corinthians. But we're also supposed to strive for perfection, so there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. What the history of progressivism has produced, essentially, is a political program that is aligned with liberalism. Liberalism believes in human rights. See, that's the big difference between liberals and progressives, and a lot of people that call themselves progressives are really more on the liberal side in terms of their basic fundamental beliefs. But progressivism has basically taken on a Gnostic perspective. Gnosticism has been around since the early times of Christianity, and possibly even before. It's Gnosticism. But Gnosticism is essentially, at its base, a rebellion against God. It's a human arrogance. It's the idea that we can judge God, use our own values and ways of interpreting whether God is being just, whether God is being kind, whether God is being nice enough to us, whether God is being equal enough in its treatment of people. And we essentially take on, as human beings, this role of determining where our society is going, rather than looking for direction. And this is really, at its base, is arrogance.
Christopher, let me ask you this. You'd mentioned, you discussed earlier the concept of rights. Is it true, or is it unfair to say that what the progressive movement believes, you know, we used to be the founding of the nation, the Declaration of Independence, there's a discussion Thomas Jefferson wrote of our unalienable rights granted to us by our Creator. So these are rights that are really outside the purview of government. Government exists to protect those rights, okay? Right. Is it fair to say that what progressives believe is that is no longer true? Instead, the elites who are going to run the government, who know what's best for us, they now determine what your rights are. And that's what's enforced in courts. That's what's made up sometimes out of whole cloth by judges who are part of that elite progressive, you know, stratum. Is that fair, or is that unfair to say about progressives?
It's very fair, and it's particularly fair in our court system, where you see Supreme Court justices just creating
right
rights and ideas that, I mean, some of the gibberish that has been in some of the recent decisions has been, you know, most people read that and just say, you know, was this guy, you know, maybe under the influence of something, because it just doesn't make any sense. It's coming out of a sense that we no longer are anchored in the original traditional Christian concepts of what it is that a human being should be and what a human being should do. And with that rebellion, essentially, I mean, progressives talk about human rights all the time. It's not like they don't talk about it. But the basis, when you ask them, you know, where did you get that human right? Where did it come from? They'll stop long before they get to the point where they say, well, God gave us that right. And that's where they essentially are adrift. And that's where you need the elites, you need the government, you need scientists and medical professionals and others to tell you what your human rights are.
Well, listen, very interesting. Who's going to win, progressivism or conservatism?
Well, conservatism will definitely win, and we already know that as Christians that it's already done. We've already won.
And by conservatism, I guess I should have been clear. I'm talking about the Christian worldview versus the atheistic, in many ways, secular humanist worldview that represented in much of progressivism.
Right, and certainly it's going to be a lot of work, and maybe God's kind of kicking us in the rear and letting us know that, hey, we're not so perfect, and, you know, evil things happen. And evil things result when we start to take the reins and start to decide that we as a society and as human beings can make all the decisions.
Thank you. Appreciate you being on with us. Again, the book is titled what, Ed, and where can folks?
It's titled Deadly Progressivism. Christopher, where can folks get a copy of your book?
It's at Amazon.com.
Yeah,
you can get it there. And then also you can go to Deadly Progressivism, all one word.
Thanks, Christopher. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Abe, you've studied this. What's this about here?
What, progressivism?
Yeah.
Well, he summed it up pretty good. Progressivism is based upon the view that mankind, over time, will make a better society. And in order to do so, mankind has to jettison, which is referred to by Karl Marx, as the opiate of the masses, religion. The progressive view is based on pretty much, like you said, secular humanism, even though not everybody who is a progressive is an atheist, but it's based upon the view that man will increase in its quality and potency over time to build a humanistic utopia. Mm-hmm. So it requires by necessity to eliminate the intellectual and physical even opposition that represents itself in Christianity.
And, you know, the first wave of progressivism in Western civilization, roughly 1880 through 1920, collapsed because of the First World War.
Yep.
There was a real feeling that science and technology was going to bring the human race into a time of, you know, utopian expectations. And then when a lot of that technology was used for, you know, poison gas and machine guns and millions died in Europe in that war— They became just so disillusioned that first progressive movement collapsed. And as he said, as Christopher said, it's kind of resurrecting itself.
It just always seems like we're running into, those of us who champion constitutional conservatism, if that's what you want to call it, or the Christian view of morality, seems like you're just always coming in conflict with these people.
Because it always comes down to God's word versus man's word.
Right.
Yeah. We'll be back after the news. We're going to talk about this latest poll. It might surprise you. Presidential poll. We'll be back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.